Some dance to remember, some dance to forget. Despite this sentiment, in most areas of life, we all would like to be more retentive, remember more, and be less forgetful. But how? What causes us to forget things? And what tools can we develop to improve our memory? Please join me in this special program. Are you forgetful? 5 secrets to a better memory. I will share secrets that I've learned through hard-earned experience. For the years that I spent memorizing verbatim talks that my great master and teacher, Rebbe, spoke for hours upon hours, we had to remember it word for word. And you'll discover counterintuitive truths about how your mind works. That memory is a lot more about listening than about thinking, a lot more about absorbing than about processing. And that when you become a better listener, it will enhance your life and all your relationships. Please join me. Hi, this is Simon Jacobson, and we will be speaking about Are You Forgetful? 5 Secrets to a Better Memory. This program is dedicated by Gerard Lackmaker in memory of Herman Herschel Chait. So we all know the famous line, some dance to remember, some dance to forget. However, despite the sentiment that there are many things that we'd like to forget, the fact is most people, and in most areas, would like to remember better. How to be more retentive, how to retain more, and less forgetful. What causes us to forget things? And in turn, what tools and methods can we employ to remember better? So that's what we'll be discussing. And I want to speak about it strictly from a vantage point that I personally have gained and been honored to become part of my life, that for many years, close to 20 years, this is what I did. My job was memory. When my great master and teacher, the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, known as the Rebbe, would speak on Shabbat and holidays when no recordings were made, and no notes were taken, we had to remember hours and hours verbatim of his talks. So I learned many secrets of the mind, many counterintuitive secrets of how the mind works, of how we retain, how we remember. Probably, I don't know if anybody else on earth even does anything like this anymore, simply because we have machines today. We have recordings. Recorders. But in our case, we had to do this. And we're talking here not about remembering a few points. A 5-hour talk, I would say a 5-hour Farbringen gathering, which would consist of around 5 hours of speaking, or a little less, would need to yield around 100 pages, because the average speed a person speaks when you transcribe the words, every hour of speaking yields 20 double-spaced 8.5 by 11 pages when printed out. So 5 hours, 100 pages. So how is that possible? Many people wonder. It sounds like a miracle. It's impossible. So there's no question there's a gift, a natural gift. But like every gift, it requires cultivation, development, conditioning. And there is a method. There is a method. So let me share these 5 secrets. It begins with an over overarching and overall statement, which isn't just about memory, which is really about human relationships. So this isn't just an intellectual exercise. How do I remember better? You have books, you have tips out there, tricks of the trade, how to associate things and create better memory. I'm talking about a fundamental different way of how we relate to each other. As you'll see, memory is far more connected to relationship than it is just to the mind. So let's use the word respect. When one person respects another, we respect the dignity of each other. There's a certain element of an attitude that we have to the other, an empathy, a sensitivity, a patience, and many other factors that allow us and help nurture a relationship. When there's lack of respect, many of those areas will be compromised. So when we're talking about memory, as we'll see, let's say speaking with someone else and remembering what they said, you'll see it's more about the relationship. The same things when you read something, or you hear something, or you experience something. What you retain will be very much based on how deeply you allow yourself to respect the experience or the person or the idea. And this will lead us into the five secrets. So a good place to begin, I think, is an area that we all can relate to. If you think in society as a whole, who remembers things best as a group, demographically? If you answered children, you'd be right. As a group, the things we heard as children, things we experienced as children, that we see as children, because we're that impressionable young age, remains with us forever. Think of stories, pleasant experiences, unpleasant experiences, traumas. They remain embedded in us. As adults, it becomes far easier and far harder, I should say, to retain things. Look at language. Try to teach a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, a language, ABC, for the first time. We wouldn't have the patience. Children, it may be hard to get their attention, but when you do, they have that ability to retain. They'll repeat A, B, C, D, until they learn the language. And the same thing with other experiences. Why is that the case? If memory is a faculty of the intellect, it would make sense. The smarter the person, the more mature the mind, the better the memory. Because memory is not just a faculty of the intellect. Memory is a faculty of absorption. Think of children like a brain, like a dry sponge. It doesn't have any ideas yet. They have no preconceived notions, no prejudices. They haven't thought things through, even for the good. So you're talking about a clean slate, a dry sponge. And as a dry sponge, it absorbs best. A wet sponge, a saturated sponge, which is a developed, mature mind. And let's say a brilliant mind. We're not even talking about distortions or prejudices. The mere fact that you already have your sponge is wet, it's harder to absorb. So the first thing, not necessarily in order of priority, but in the five secrets is, let's use the word absorb. Absorb versus process. Think of it this way. The brain has two wheels in it. One is called the processor, one is called the absorber. The order should be the opposite. The absorber and then the processor. The absorber listens. It doesn't process. It doesn't take ideas and say, okay, what is the conclusion? What does this teach me? It's all about just absorbing. Quietly absorbing. Adults do not know how to absorb well. While we're listening, we're already processing. I see this all the time. And because we're processing, we're no longer absorbing what is being said. We're absorbing actually what we're thinking about, my attitude to it. So if you hear an idea, it's very stimulating. Oh, that reminds me of another idea. Or that answers my question. Or that poses a question. You're a partner in the exchange instead of just being a passive absorber. You're no longer a dry sponge. When I listened to my master, I had to put aside all my preconceived notions, all the ideas, which wasn't easy. It's one of the hardest things to do. Because especially if you understand things well, especially if you're smart, especially if you're well-read, all that is actually works against your absorber. It's great for processing, but it's not good for absorbing. Absorbing means put that aside. I'll give two examples. Think of a judge and a jury. Evidence, witnesses, and suddenly a very persuasive witness or a persuasive piece of evidence comes before them. So you don't want, if you're looking for the objective truth, you don't want anyone to be swayed by that. You want them to listen closely to the evidence, but then there's more evidence. There may be counter evidence. If they get so swayed and so affected by it, they'll no longer be able to be open-minded. So they have to listen to all evidence, all witnesses, then begins the processing. You don't want them to process before they listen and absorb. Another example, research. You're doing research. You don't start drawing conclusions before you finish, because it could be one last piece of data may change the whole equation. So essentially what you're doing is, let's gather information. Now, fact-finding, discovery, due diligence, all the process, all that, I shouldn't say process. I meant to say the process of gathering information. Then you put it all together and say, okay, what does this tell me? And you have all the details and you start trying to put together the puzzle. There you see that any intelligent process is going to require those two stages. In the words of the Talmud, it says the following. It's actually laws about what foods absorb other and what's exude. So it says, when you're busy absorbing, you can't be busy exuding. And when you're busy exuding, you can't be busy absorbing. You can't be speaking and listening at the same time, basically. If you're absorbing something, you're not giving off, you're receiving. That's critical. In Hasidic terminology, it's called bittul. Putting yourself aside, your mind aside, your ideas aside, to absorb. At the end of this program, I'm going to give a suggestion, an exercise that can help us all in this regard. But I want to move to item number two. That is listen. What does it mean to listen? So I just explained, listen means to absorb. But listen is not hearing. Hearing, if you have healthy ears, you hear sounds. Listening means actually to truly listen, to put yourself aside. And this is the key thing that I'm adding here. And allowing yourself to put yourself in the shoes of another person. The empathy that comes with that, the sensitivity. You'll hear and hear things and listen to things you've not heard before. Look, an example. Your child comes home from school crying. But you're very busy and distracted. You have other things to do. The child's in pain. So if you're not in the listening mode, you'll placate the child. Here, do this, or just stop thinking about it. Or you don't make a big thing of it. But let's, for argument's sake, say the child is really bothered by something important. But you have not learned how to listen. Listening is an art, the art of listening. And what does that art consist of? Putting aside everything you're doing and sitting down and saying, tell me, my dear son, my dear daughter, what's on your mind? What are you feeling? But it's not just what you say. That person should know that you have put everything aside. So absorbing, we spoke about, was more about putting your mind aside and allowing yourself to absorb the idea. Here we're talking about actually listening to another. And the same is true when you read something. And I want to go back to myself. When we were listening, when I listened to the Rebbe, to my teacher, it was, yes, absorbing, but I was listening. I really wanted to hear and listen to what he says. Remember before we spoke about respect. When you respect someone, you listen to them. And listening, I'm not saying that it means listening, obeying. That's a different discussion. I'm talking about listening truly what that person wants to say. Not what you want them to say, not what you think they should say. I remember many times having a conversation with someone. And they start telling me, they start arguing about whatever point. Not even getting who's right. But instead of responding to me, the person says, you didn't hear what I said. Let me rephrase it. They rephrase it. And I said, I hear what you're saying and I still disagree with you. No, if you really heard what I said, you wouldn't disagree. That person's just simply not listening to me. They have their preset, they're absolutely convinced they're right. That's a lack of listening. That's not called listening. Listening is a lost art, my friends. Because we've learned to become aggressive. We've learned to become go-getters. And a go-getter is more in the state of what is in it for me. You're not really listening. I know in sales, and they teach you, listen to your customer. And those that know how to listen actually are going to be more successful. Don't try to sell them something. Listen where they're at, and then say, I have the perfect thing for you. So even there's an ulterior motive, but you are listening. So this is an art that we need to cultivate, the power to listen, not just to hear. Often in relationships, this is very common. You're not listening to me. And your husband or wife will repeat everything. Often men are worse at this than women. Will repeat everything. I'm not talking about a tape recorder. I'm not talking about repeating what I said. You're not listening. You're not listening. You're not feeling my pain, my love, my compassion, my sense here. You're not sensing me. I used to use a trick question in many audiences when I did some exercises that helped people develop their memory. My question was, I stopped doing it because it was just too humiliating, to be honest. I was asking, how many of you are good listeners? And any group of, let's say, 100 people, 10, 20 would raise their hands. Most wouldn't, but some would. And then I would point out, a good listener usually will not say, I'm a good listener. Secondly, on a very practical level, you don't ask someone if they're a good listener. You ask the people around them, are they good listeners? You ask their wife or their husband or their friends. How do you know if you're a good listener? You may think you're a good listener, but everyone that speaks to you doesn't think you listen at all. Or maybe not such a good listener. Because listening is connected to our third secret, humility. The critical need for humility. Now, there's overlap between absorb, listen, and humility, but each of them is a different characteristic, a different tool, different methodology that you need to cultivate. And humility means the ability to just not be all self-consumed and driven by self-interest. People are driven by self-interest. Yes, they may listen if it serves their interest, but they're not true listeners, and they're not truly going to absorb because it's a certain narcissistic, everything orbits around me, 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 me. So listening, that question, are you a good listener, really comes down to that. Again, we will talk about some exercises. So let's talk about humility. Interesting statement in the Talmud. There's the classic arguments about different sages, but the classic Shammai and Hillel. Shammai and Hillel disagreed about different matters. They were colleagues, but they had a different approach. Shammai was usually more strict. Hillel was more lenient. Finally, and each one, they had their communities, their students. The students of Shammai listened and followed Shammai's guidelines. And the students of Hillel followed Hillel's guidelines. But then there came a need to create a consensus. So the question was asked, so how do we determine? They're both great scholars, both great people. They both presented good arguments. So finally, the decision was made, Hillel will follow Hillel's rulings. Why? Because Hillel was humbler. Shammai was a humble man. They were both humble. But Hillel had more humility. And how do we know that? Because when he would present arguments, he would first present his adversary's arguments. He'd first present Shammai's argument and present it well. Not like some who present the opponent's argument, but they build in all kinds of weaknesses in order to then be able to rebut or reject it. No, he would present Shammai's argument in full glory, and then he would present his own. Most people will present my opinion, then I'll tell you, is there another dissenting opinion? Yes, there is, but you won't give it the same credence as you give your own. Hillel did the opposite. He preceded Shammai's arguments, and then he presented his. Beautiful. But the question is asked, humility? Give him an award for humility. What does it have to do with being the ruling should go according to him? You'd think. Who do you follow? You'd follow the one who has better arguments, the one who's more brilliant, the one who brings more proof, the one who's more persuasive, more logical. I mean, there are many criteria that can determine when you have two different people with opinions, who to follow? Humility is a beautiful virtue. What does it have to do with an intellectual inquiry? The answer is because humility adds the element of objectivity. When you're subjective, so let's take the worst case, real bias and prejudice, you're blinded. In the words of the Bible, bias, bribery, blinds the eyes of the wise and distorts the words of the righteous. How could you call them wise and righteous? Because even if you're wise and righteous, if you're biased, if you have some interest, you need to recuse yourself, as we know, in a court of law or in other situations. You need to be transparent, full disclosure. Because your bias, even though you may say it's not really affecting me, if it's about your brother or your sister or about somewhere you have financial interest, there's bias. And you're not going to be completely objective. And even if you think you are, others need to know that you have interests in this area. So then they can qualify what you're saying. And the truth is you should recuse yourself if you're a judge or you're any other, if you have any vested interest in the result of the case or whatever it is that we're dealing with. So humility isn't just a nice virtue, it actually creates a more objective perspective. We have out there many professors and geniuses, but they're arrogant. Does that mean that their ideas and theories are always wrong? No, but you can trust it less. They may more likely forge something, they may likely do something for their own egos and pride, like we've seen. Plenty of forgeries and plenty of deceit in the scientific world. Humility adds an element where you can trust it. You can trust the person. Now, does that mean they're perfect? No. And does it mean they're always right? No. But it's an added element to the equation. So in good memory, those that remember best are the ones that are most humble. Most humble, especially in the area that they're working in, which in turn allows them to listen and absorb. But humility is its own particular way of dealing with things. It's hard for me to imagine a very arrogant person having a good memory around some other idea, not his own interests, obviously, someone else's ideas, a book, a teacher, and so on, for the reasons mentioned. It's number three. Number four is concentration. The ability to concentrate, to put everything aside and to concentrate. So let's talk about concentration. Concentration means when you're reading something, you don't get distracted by your texting or by the phone is ringing or some other issue. What people call multitasking. Multitasking is not exactly work well for retaining and memory. I remember once meeting a friend of mine that we were together as friends. We were in this school together, high school classmates, friends. We hadn't seen each other in a while. But we happened to both be going to a wedding of a mutual friend, and we both driven in the same car, both sitting in the back seat. And I thought a good time to catch up. Well, he was busy texting. I couldn't get his attention. I tried to elbow him, you know, in a nice way. No. So finally I did something to get his attention. I texted him. Yes. I remember he looks at his text and he's like somewhat disconcerted a little. What's going on here? Like this. He says, "Man, are you texting me?" You know, he thought maybe it's a text I sent earlier. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why are you texting me? You're sitting right near me." I said, "Because I can't get your attention." So he giggled, he chuckled, and said, "Wait online." And I never ended up having a conversation with him because he had other people to text with. Now, I didn't see it as disrespectful. It didn't hurt me. I did not need therapy for it. But in a way, I saw, you know, I think to myself, how concentrated does this person have? I don't know. I'm not here to judge him either. I'm sure people concentrate when it's important for them. If he thought I can give him a $1 million donation or something else that would serve his interest, I'm sure he wouldn't be ignoring me. But the concentration is the capacity not just to understand something, not just to conceive of an idea or comprehend an idea. It's the total focus. I mentioned before listening to our children. Someone that you listen to, you're concentrating. You're really completely focused. Everything else is put aside. So concentration is an element of also connecting to the person or to the idea that you are engaging with. And that is the fourth element, the fourth secret to a better memory, concentration. When I was listening to the Rebbe, I remember everything else I put aside. Not just my ideas and preconceived notions, as I mentioned before, but it was a total focus, total focus. Now, that's also not difficult, not easy to do. It's difficult because we all get distracted. It's a normal thing to get distracted, but it's an art that needs to be mastered and a type of total focus and concentration on what you're dealing with right now. So far we've done absorb, listen, humility, and concentration. The final of the fifth, even though there are more elements, and I'll mention a few, additional tips, is review. You want to remember well, you need to review what you've heard. And here's another little interesting counterintuitive secret about the mind. I'm sure this has happened to you. It happens to all of us. You, let's say, heard a speech or a talk delivered, or you read something that really was very impressive. You say, oh, this I must share with my friends, with my family, and so on. You come the next day or a little while later and you say, I just heard something really powerful. Now share with us. You start ecking and becking and saying, I know it was very impactful. And you can't find the words. You say to yourself, what happened to me? Last night I heard this. It was really, unbelievable. I said to myself, I'm going to share it. And now I can't repeat half of it. I can't even repeat part of it. So was it delusional? Was it like complete, farce? No, the answer is when you were listening to someone else, you were listening and appreciating what was said because the person who was saying it understood what they were saying, but it didn't become yours. You didn't own it. To own it, you have to work hard. That's why many people say that when you hear someone speak, and again, Shabbat and holidays, we couldn't do that, write what you're listening to. It helps you internalize it. Review it. That's the key. If you had repeated it to yourself after the speech or after what you read or in some way documented within you, not just relied on, oh, I heard something great, then what would have happened is that it became part of who you are and you'd have been able to repeat it. In other words, our ears travel faster than our brain and retention in the brain. Our processing is faster than our absorbing, so to speak. So in other words, you heard something and you thought you really retained it, but you didn't. Retaining means you have to review it. You have to make it yours. And that is critical in the process of memory. So let me give you an example of how it worked. So I'm listening to the Rebbe speak, let's say a half-hour talk among a long five-hour, what's called Fabringen, which means gathering. There'd be five or six talks, so each one, let's say, 40 minutes each, 30 minutes each, 45 minutes each. A total of 5 hours. So after the first talk, so very interesting. I did the process of absorbing, of listening, the humility necessary, and the concentration. But now comes the fifth final step, reviewing it. So when they would sing a song, which was usually the case after a talk, I didn't just sing along and just daydream. I would review in my mind everything that I just heard, literally step by step, not just in general terms, highlights, but specifics. Think of you're being driven somewhere before the age of GPS, and you want to memorize how to get there. So what do? You say, five blocks straight, then they made a right, then two blocks, they made a left, then they made another right, left. You create a mental roadmap with signposts. When was there a turn? The same thing mentally when the Rebbe would speak, so I would say to myself, I actually would number it. I'd say there were 55 points made in this talk. And I would actually number them. Say the first he began with this and this theme. And that went along pretty logically, but then something parenthetical or changed course or asked a question or gave an answer, I would make signposts for myself. And I'd number it. So later, when I would review it the second time, I would follow the roadmap that I had created, the mental roadmap with the signposts. And I'd say, 1 second, I knew there were 55 points, now I only remember 51 or 45 or whatever it may be. So at least I could identify what something's missing. And I would do it fresh right after I heard it. So it's like almost making a carbon copy of what you just heard. And the interesting thing with memory is you don't remember what was said, you remember what you remember what was said. And then you remember what you remember what you remember what was said. In other words, the more times you review it until you finally write it down, you're actually, that's the way you retain it better. The more time that passes and you don't review it, memory fades as soon as you hear it. So the key was review, review again, again. Sometimes I reviewed it 10 times before the Sabbath was over when I was able to write it down. So review is critical because what you're doing is internalizing it, making it yours, owning it. And as such, you're turning it into a picture as well. And that helps the retention. When I did not do that and I took for granted or I felt, oh, this talk was an easy one. Later, it was a nightmare, to be honest, because I didn't do the right steps. I knew I had to do it. Doesn't matter whether I understood it or I thought it was easier. No, always have to do that because there's no way that you won't be able to do that. And you come to realize you won't be able to retain it without doing that. You come to also realize that after you retain it and you absorb it and then you write it down, you're going to go through stages of confusion. Like it always is. You get a lot of data, and then you don't know whether you're coming or going, and then you have to reconstruct it, and then it begins to emerge. But the more you do the early step properly, the absorbing, the listening, the humility, the concentration, and now the review, the more likely you'll have the clearest possible, crystal clear possible picture of retaining. And that's why and how I was able to retain close to 99%. So if it's 100 pages, we're able to recreate 99 out of 100 pages without redundancy of 5 hours of speaking. Now, is this easy? No, it's not. And I'm going to now suggest an exercise, two exercises actually, that can help you, first help you see where you stand in this regard, and then help you actually improve your memory. So here's an exercise that I've tried many times with probably a few thousand people total, not in one group, small groups of 40, 50, but it always works consistently the same. The exercise consists of this. Take any book you like, any book. It could be a book you've read many times, it could be a new book. Open it up to any random page. The goal is for you to read it as many times as you wish. There's no time limit. Then, when you're ready, close the book, take out a piece of paper, and write down what you just read. It doesn't have to be verbatim, not word for word. The flow of ideas, a page, 2 pages. Before we begin the exercise, I always ask the group, and I'm asking you when you do it, what do you estimate? How well will you do? 100% means you'll capture it literally like a mirror image, exactly what's said on the page you have written down. That's very unlikely for most people, especially a first time. So ask, what do you think, estimate? Most people say 75, 80%. They'll do that, that's how well they'll do. 75% of what they've read, they will be able to capture. Okay, we begin the exercise. Everyone has their book. Take as much time as they like. The first time around, you see immediately the people who feel that they're the smartest. They do it very quickly. They write down, then they sit down, they close their book, and they sit like this, waiting for everybody else, you know? And I always smile to myself when I see that, because I know what that means. Okay, after 15, 20 minutes, everyone's done. Next step, I say to everybody, now pass the book and what you've written to your neighbor. And let them evaluate what you did. Nobody gets more than 75%. 70%, nobody. The ones that did it quicker, the ones that they thought were the smartest, and maybe they were the smartest, their numbers go down direct proportion of how quickly they did it. Meaning, if they did it quickly, 60%, 40%, 30%, to the point, listen to this, that those that did the quickest often write things on the paper that contradict what it says in the book. And I say to them, how could you do that? They say, well, I didn't agree with it. And I say, you didn't even listen to the instructions. You didn't even follow. I mean, the exercise here was not whether you agree or disagree. It's just to write down what you heard. You can always disagree later. They processed before they absorbed. They were overconfident or arrogant. So then we go around and I said, let's do it a second time. Second time, everybody's results go up by 20%. That's why I always say 20% money back guarantee, 20% improvement in your memory. What happened? Second time around, everyone has been humbled. They become more realistic. You're not a listener as good as you thought you were. You don't memorize as good as you thought. You're not as smart as you think you were. So this time people take 20 minutes, a half hour, and the longer they take and the more they deliberate, obviously the more they'll retain. So a big part of it is the overconfidence and the delusion even, that we think we are good at it already. Just by learning that you're not, that already is going to make you better. And you start being overconfident, you start being humble in the process. Humility, yes. So the second time around, everyone does better. The second exercise, in relationships. Let's say you have a long-standing disagreement with someone you love, your spouse, a friend, a family member. And you've agreed to disagree. It means, you know, we don't have to always fight about it. Here's the suggestion. You'd always like to, it's always hanging there like a shadow. You'd like to resolve it. Go to your spouse. And I usually say this to husbands to go to their wives. It could be the other way around. It could be someone else, but it's that idea. I say, look, I don't want to argue with you about this. We know we have disagreement, but I'd like to really get closer. And maybe we could resolve. Please share with me your opinion on this matter. I'm going to be quiet. I will not cut you off. I won't interrupt you, and I will try to listen, absorb, humbly concentrate, and then review and repeat to you what you're saying. And tell me if I'm conveying your opinion legitimately, with integrity, exactly as you mean it. Now, here's the little trick. It's very difficult to repeat to someone something you disagree with. You'll always add some caveats, some, like I mentioned before with Hillel. If you can do that, you're already a long way toward reconciliation. Try it out. Because what you're doing is exercising exactly those 5 points I made before. Absorbing, listening, humility, concentration, and review. And maybe you disagree with it. And I'm fine you disagree. But first, at least, absorb, listen, and the other elements. Absorb, listen, be humble, concentrate, and review what the other person is saying in a way that they feel you've done justice to it. Like Hillel did, preceding the other person's argument first. The mere fact that you can do that is also a tremendous thing. Because at least the other person says, at least you heard me. I see that you did listen. That's a big thing. Then you could say, you know, I heard you well. I listened well. You say I repeated it properly. Now I'd like to share my thought on it. Or you may feel that you don't need to do that. Many things could happen once you exercise these new methodologies and tools. These are just two of many thoughts and exercises or practices that you can employ to help you improve your memory. So my friends, you see that memory is much more than just an intellectual thing. It's not just remembering ideas, remembering things that you've forgotten. It's a whole other attitude to another person, to an idea. It's a respect. It's a connection. So I do want to add one final point that I think is vital. You have to have that respect. And I'd like to use the word even passion and inspiration. When I listened to my master, it wasn't because I was obligated to do so, because I was paid to do so, someone forced me to do so. I loved what I heard. I respected what I heard. To me, it was like hearing divine wisdom that I'll hear once in my lifetime, may never hear it again. And there's no recordings and no notes. So it was a sense of urgency. It was compelling. That, of course, adds to the impetus and the motivation and incentive to want to employ the other five, the five secrets, which is the absorbing, the listening, the humility, the concentration, and the review. Because they all take work. Why would I do it? Today, people sometimes say something to me and I'm daydreaming. Whatever. Okay, I'm guilty of that at times. And they say to me, did you hear what I said? Did you? Okay. So, you know, the diplomatic way to answer is, can you rephrase it, even though you didn't hear it? A little white lie, a bit. Can you rephrase it? But in truth is, you say, no, I didn't really remember what you said. I didn't hear what you said. You're able to remember hours of the Rebbe's talks and you can't remember 2 minutes of mine. So I don't want to be the one that breaks it on them, that I don't hear history unfolding and what they had to say. And I'm not here to judge in any way. But that's a factor, because when you hear history being made and you're passionate and you know these are invaluable ideas, you'll then make that effort to absorb, to listen, to be humble, to concentrate, and to review. So that, of course, is a critical piece in having that element of passion and connection and attachment to the thing that you want to absorb and retain. So my friends, I hope this was helpful. I hope this can help you not just in how to retain ideas, absorb ideas, but also how to have better relationships, how to look at life in a more deliberate way, how to live in a more deliberate fashion, to dare, to take on, to engage, not just to be superficial and play it safe, to engage in the deepest possible way, and to enhance yourself, your relationships, your connection, and especially in the areas where you may feel you haven't figured out or you may feel you disagree. That's the areas where you most can use these five secrets. Thank you so much. This has been Simon Jacobson. MeaningfulLife.com is our website. Please check it out. Full array and calendar of events and programs and topics. Please subscribe to our offerings. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And please share. I'd love to hear your feedback, thoughts, comments, suggestions. Be blessed and be well. Thank you.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.